Jones turned to look for the ball at the 11, and Chidobe Awuzie never turned around. It's a 7 yards that he didn't react to the receiver looking back and turning his head for the ball.
This guy has the arm of Cody Kessler, but he has the size of Davis Webb. So people always say, oh, he has a big arm, strong arm, dude. This guy has a noodle arm. He can barely throw a noodle in the field.
Everybody says, yes, those are definitely guys with first-round grades. But then once you start getting into team needs and philosophies and just basically different opinions, you then get a group of about 10 to 15, might maybe even 20 people that have a first-round grade on one team's board, but not on another team's board. So you have that pudgy middle.
You are now rocking with the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to another exciting, exhilarating podcast episode of Catch This Fade. We're doing 5 days a week now, so we're going to be branching out into a lot more things on a lot more frequent basis. And one of the things that's obviously a hot topic when it comes down to the end of January, beginning of February, is the NFL draft. The NFL draft has basically become, I can't even call it a cottage industry anymore. It's more like a mansion industry because there are so many people out there that are giving opinions on draft picks, on draft prospects, I should say, and it's kind of gotten a little bit convoluted. But I know myself personally that I have great friends that know what the hell they're talking about. They know what they're talking about to the extent that I don't even really do the same level of draft research that I did anymore because it pales in comparison to how much tape these guys grind, how dedicated they are to finding the best prospects that go above and beyond what everybody else is talking about. And I have one of those guys that's going to be joining me not just today, but for the foreseeable future as a co-host on a weekly basis. My man Jonah Tulls is here. He is an NFL draft analyst. And when I tell you that he is one of the most thorough people when it comes to breaking down these prospects, you will not believe what he's going to be bringing to you over the next couple months in preparation for the 2019 draft. So let's go to the line right now and say what's up to my man Jonah. Jonah, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, Katie, I'm doing good, man. I am so excited to be talking draft, up until April. It's going to be a great experience. And, the Cowboys, very interesting decision. We don't have a first-round pick, so this should be a blast, man. Thanks for having me on.
It is an interesting scenario with the Cowboys not having a first-round pick. This is going to be the first time since 2009 that they've gone without having a first-round pick. And because of how they finished the year, obviously when they traded their first for Amari Cooper, they were 3-4. They lost the first game 3-5. It was looking like they gave up possibly a top 15 and even possibly a top 10 pick, which from my point of view at the time was very dangerous. We all know how draft boards are set up. There are 32 picks in each of the rounds, but there aren't 32 first-round caliber players. Most years really have only about 16, maybe 18, maybe 20. If it's just an absolutely dynamic draft, you might get up to 22 players that universally, and it's not even universally, I shouldn't say that, but 22 players on any given team's draft board that they have rated as a first round pick. Now, you have 10 to 12 guys who everybody agrees upon. Everybody says, yes, those are definitely guys with first-round grades. But then once you start getting into team needs and philosophies and just basically different opinions, you then get a group of about 10 to 15, might maybe even 20 people that have a first-round grade on one team's board, but not on another team's board. So you have that kind of pudgy middle that people could get drafted in the first round, but not everybody shares the same opinion on. And then after that, all hell breaks loose. So for me, seeing the Cowboys give up a potential top 15 pick at the time for Amari Cooper, I didn't like the value, but I understood what the Cowboys had to do in order to change the public narrative on their season and potentially get a home run player, which it looks like they absolutely did. But now that leaves us with the record that the Cowboys had, with them not having a first round pick, Dallas isn't getting a top 25 player. They're not getting a top 35 player or 45 player. Dallas is what, number 58 in the second mm-hmm. round? That's mm-hmm. a big drop off from what you thought they were going to do when we were around October. So that completely shifts the focus of everything that they can do for the draft coming up. They have to consider trading up if they want to grab one of those high profile names, or they have to kind of see who falls to them. But for the draft, Nick, things don't change that way because every board has to be stacked from top to bottom, and then they break out into tiers and layers and who is available, who do you pick between these guys, who can you get later on in the draft, if you go wide receiver early, can you get a safety late, and all of those sorts of things come into play when a team is building their draft board, and I've seen nobody do it better than my man Jonah Toews. So that's why he's here to bring all the knowledge to you. So let me ask you this first. How do you see this board breaking down as far as the layers? What level of talent do you think is going to be available this year at 58 for the Cowboys?
So first things first, when you're breaking down this year's draft class, is it's a defensive line heavy group.
Okay.
You got guys at the top like Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver, Jeffrey Simmons, who are all going to go in the top half of this first round. And even guys like Rashawn Gary, who's a projection player from end of tackle. And then you got freak athletes like Nick Bosa, Josh Allen, Ja'Kai Polite. These are all defensive linemen who will go in the first round. So I think you're looking at 10 to 12 picks on the defensive line the first round. So when you have to break down this 2019 class, you have to start on the D-line.
Okay.
And then that's when you want to shift over towards, I think, the other side of the line, which is the offensive line. So I think you could see 5 or 6 offensive linemen draft in the first round as well. So this is really a trench-heavy draft class. And then, of course, the quarterbacks. Where are Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, Drew Locke, and Daniel Jones going to go? Because I think if you talk to NFL people, these are the four prospects that are going to go somewhere in the first round. Okay. That when you talk to NFL people, Dwayne Haskins, most likely top 10 guy. Kyler Murray, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes anywhere from top 5 to the late half of the first round. And Drew Locke and Daniel Jones, the Broncos are a top landing spot for them in mock drafts recently at number 10. So it all depends on the trench. This is a trench heavy group, and the quarterbacks is all going to depend on where they fall, depending on, you know, Who could fall to Dallas at 58 is going to depend on which quarterbacks go in the first round, because that means another prospect would be dropped down the board to Dallas at 58. So the more quarterbacks, the merrier for the Cowboys for sure.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, because we all know, regardless of which side of the equation you fall on in evaluating Dak Prescott, the Cowboys are not moving away from him. They are not going to draft somebody in the first round.
Right.
Well, obviously not in the first round, but with their first pick. So mm-hmm. We all know that that's out the window. So any quarterback that gets taken, either any of those four guys or anybody that sneaks into the top half of the second round, or we often see teams sneak into the last 3 or 4 picks of the first round in order to get that fifth-year option on a quarterback.
Right.
So that could happen as well. But still, Dallas picking all the way down at 58, that's a little scary proposition. I know that there are multiple positions that Dallas could go with. They have needs everywhere, but they don't have glaring have-to-fill needs,
right,
which is a little bit different than the situation they've been in the past. But what do you think are the deep positions? I know you said 10 to 12 defensive linemen. The Cowboys could clearly use a 3 technique. We saw how much they missed David Irving this past year.
Right.
But with 10 to 12 D linemen going in the first round, will there then be an entire gulf between them and the next tier? Or if Dallas does go in that direction, would defensive line still be deep all the way down at 58? Or would something else be in mind?
And that's an interesting question, because there is a little bit of a drop of defensive line. But in terms of overall encapsulating what the Cowboys need in this draft at 58, it seems like a big drop off, you know, from where they're picking at 27, I believe, to now 58. If I'm not mistaken, the last 3 times the Cowboys have traded a first-round pick has been for a wide receiver, Joey Galloway, Roy Williams, and now Amari Cooper.
Luckily
for the Cowboys, Amari Cooper looks like he's going to pan out. But so you look at the Cowboys' top needs. I think it's wide receiver. I think it's tight end. They've got defensive tackle and then safety. Luckily for Dallas, I think there's going to be a good prospect at each of those positions at 58. Let's start at defensive line. We got guys like Jerry Tillery, a 3 technique from Notre Dame, big dude, about 6'5", 320, DeForest Buckner kind of build.
Oh, okay.
He's a really disruptive pass rusher, a guy who really is raw mentally right now, but he has a lot of athletic tools. I think he's going to blow up the combine. And then a really underrated guy is Gerald Willis from Miami, one gap penetrating Rod Marinelli type defensive tackle right there. He's of the Malik Collins build, where he's a little inconsistent, but when he's on, man, he is one of the best pass rushing defensive tackles in this draft. Now shifting to safety, you know, if the Cowboys do want to sign Earl Thomas, then this is probably less of a need. But if they decide to keep the money in the pocketbook, I think you got to look at guys like Darnell Savage from Maryland. He's a He's a prototypical box safety who I think is the best man coverage safety in this draft class. You keep Xavier Woods deep. He's a guy that can cover slot receivers, tight ends with ease. He did it. No one could guard Penny Hart at the Senior Bowl except Darnell Savage. This is a guy that I think can provide instant man coverage value on the defensive end of the ball. And I think he's a guy that would be a perfect fit for the Cowboys at 58. Now you go to tight ends. Tight ends, you know, this is a deep tight end class. I think it's probably, you talk about what positions are deep. Tight end is probably the deepest position group in this draft class. It's like TJ Hawkinson, Noah Fant, Dawson Knox, Irv Smith Jr. These guys are all probably going to go before Dallas' slot at 58. But then you look at guys like Jay Sternberger. This is where I'm starting to get past 58 in the third and fourth rounds.
Okay.
You guys like Jay Sternberger from A&M. If you want a true receiver down the field, finds a seam. He's one of those guys that if you want a true receiving threat, Sternberger's your guy. Then you guys like Foster Moreau from LSU, who I think is the most underutilized player, one of the most underutilized players in this draft class, regardless of position. LSU's a run-heavy team, and Foster Moreau was used as much as a blocker as a result. But you saw the Senior Bowl, he unleashed him as receiving ability, and you see the value in him as a receiver going forward. So I think those two guys are names I would watch for Dallas for sure. And then we got wide receiver. Wide receiver at 58, you got guys like Akeem Butler, Riley Ridley, perhaps, and then Andy Isabella and Penny Hart. These are guys that can all play inside or out. And then with Amari Cooper, the beauty with Amari Cooper is just as good in the slot as he is on the outside. So you don't necessarily have to take just a slot receiver like Andy Isabella at 58. Right. You can go outside and take a guy like Akeem Butler or a guy like Antoine Wesley from Texas Tech, or even if N'Keal Harry falls down from Arizona State all the way to 58. You can get a true X receiver to pair with Michael Gallup at the Z and Amari Cooper in the slot, and then all those guys can interchange too. So all of Dallas' position groups, wide receiver, tight end, defensive tackle, and safety, I would consider the four major needs. There's going to be a great prospect there at 58 for them. So I wouldn't be too worried about them not having a first-round pick because at what they need, there's going to be depth at those positions there.
You know, we're not even 10 minutes into this conversation, and you just rattled off maybe 50 names that I'm not even familiar with. So for our listeners out there that are wondering how they can make sure that they stay up to date on everything that Jonah Tulls is doing, he probably has 100 to 200 names he's already evaluated, but make sure you're following him on Twitter at Jonah Tulls NFL, JONAHTULSNFL. Make sure you're following him on Twitter. He will be here with Catch This Fade on a weekly basis throughout draft season to give us the nitty gritty on all of these prospects, and we are going to be so much smarter for it. Now, one of the names that you mentioned that really caught my attention is Savage, because go Terps. So I would be absolutely ecstatic if he went from College Park all the way down to Frisco, Texas to do his trade.
Yeah.
It would actually be a great moment for me to be able to see that happen. Let's talk about the safety position a little bit. I'm going to go a little bit off script. My firm belief out of the research that I did says that Xavier Woods excelled as a free safety, but he also played between over one-third, not nearly a half, but over one-third of his snaps in what would traditionally be considered a strong safety role, either in cover two when there's two safeties back, or whether he's in the box, lined up on a slot receiver or a tight end or whatever the case may be. That's how his snaps broke down this year. So I'm of the firm belief that because he's such an impactful hitter, and he didn't really seem to take the type of bad ankles that we saw out of a guy like Jeff Heath, that he could serve in either role. Is there a preference early in the draft as opposed to later in the draft as far as box safety or center fielder? Or is it one of those things that you're seeing prospects at both of the safety spots, or both of the safety roles, I should say, that could be found throughout the draft?
Well, as you know, I mean, deep center fielders, good deep center fielders, I may add, are always hard to come by.
Right.
I mean, you don't find guys like that's like Marcus Williams, who had drafted by the Saints a couple of years ago, one of my favorites from Utah.
Yes.
That's why he got picked up in the top 50 really quick. I mean, guys like Malik Hooker gets drafted in the first round. You don't see guys, deep middle fielders who have good tape and have good eyes and have good discipline. These guys don't fall past the top 50, top 60 picks. It's because they're so valued today because they're so rare. So I think if you want a deep center fielder, a good one, you're going to have to take one of the first three rounds for sure. I like what you said about Xavier Woods. That's the beauty of Xavier Woods. He can play down. He can play deep. And that's why Chris Richard wants interchangeable safeties. So I don't think how you draft a safety is going to depend on what Xavier Woods is. Because Xavier Woods, you can move him around.
Right.
So that's a great point by you, KD. And then two more names I want to throw at you. One is Marquise Blair from Utah. Okay. If you want a deep center fielder who you can draft in the second or third round, this guy's a little light, 6'2", 180, but he has excellent range. He has excellent eye discipline. I think he's one of the best deep safeties in this draft. If you want to talk about guys like Deontay Thompson and Nasir Adderley, the third guy after that is probably going to be someone like Marquise Blair, because he has great ball skills. Watch the Arizona tape. This guy was all over the field, and this guy's really known for his big hits on tape, but how he projects as a 6'2", 185-pound safety is going to be deep. And he really showed that. I think he's a Chris Richard safety waiting to happen. And then another guy I want to mention is Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State. This guy's a hard-hitting guy. If you want to keep Xavier Woods over the top deep, Jonathan Abram's a perfect box safety for you. He's not going to be for everybody, because I know that not everyone needs a box safety, but if you do need one, this guy is what – if you drew a box safety on Madden, if you created a player, this is what you would see. 6'2", 215. This guy's a prototypical size, a big hitter, a guy who's – just excellent in run support. He's a little shaky in man coverage, but he's a guy that I think you can work with, because he has athletic tools that you can really mold with him. So two guys, you want the deep safety, go Marquise Blair from Utah. If you want the box guy, you know, run support, really reliable with his angles, take Jonathan Abram, because he did it for 2 or 3 years at Mississippi State at a high level.
Now, you brought up Abram's size being 6'2", and obviously when Chris Richard was running the Legion of Doom in Seattle, he only had one shorty in his lineup. Earl Thomas was the only shorty. Everybody else was 6'2", 6'3", 6'4".
That's right.
So that's one of the things that, as much as I love and advocate, and I will draw a picket sign and put glitter on it and march around to get Earl Thomas in Dallas, the idea of them putting two shorties back there at safety,
yeah.
It gives me pause based on what we know of Chris Richard, but do you incorporate that into – obviously, your big board is universal. You put a big board together based on the entire NFL.
Right.
You don't do team specific. But as far as what the Cowboys need, how much do you think that will come into play? Because what I noticed last year was – they brought in Chris Richard in January, and they didn't sign any free agents at the position, and they didn't draft anybody at the position. It was kind of like they gave him, okay, well, come in, see what you have with this group of guys, and then next year we'll go out and get your shopping list. You'll be able
to get
the groceries to put in the kitchen. So I'm fully expecting the Cowboys, quiet as kept, even though Byron Jones had a phenomenal – well, at least a start to the season. The back end of the season wasn't that great. We saw Chidobe Awuzie come on down the end, down the stretch of the season. He improved, stopped, well, not completely stopped, but he started locating the ball a little bit better than he was earlier in the year. Anthony Brown in the slot. I picketed for ever and ever for them to play more Jordan Lewis. But all of these guys, they kind of max out. Byron obviously has the length of somebody much taller than he is, and he has decent size. But the rest of these guys don't fit the 6'2", 6'3", 6'4 mold. So do you see that being something that's readily available as far as talent in this draft and need for the Cowboys?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and when you look at this cornerback class, you mentioned a lot of these corners. There's so many 6'1", 6'2" guys in this draft.
Okay.
I mean, so if I'm Chris Richard, just projecting what Richard's going to think, I think he might move Awuzie to the nickel. This guy was a great nickel player at Colorado. This is why I projected him to be coming out of Colorado. He had great film. See, I think this is a guy who's best in the nickel. He's best in really tight spaces. When you kind of open up the field a little bit, that's when you can get a little exposed. We saw a little bit this year, especially in the back end of the season. Mm-hmm. But again, I think if you look at a nickel type player, that's Awuzie. And then that means you just start looking for more boundary players, right? So I could see, you know, Chris Richard falling in love with a guy like Justin Lane from Michigan State. The Cowboys love ascending players. You saw like Leighton Vander Esch. You saw like Connor Williams. These guys are ascending players who are not even close to their peak talent yet. Justin Lane came into Michigan State at East Lansing as a wide receiver, and he's only played one full season as a cornerback, and he's already declaring he's a redshirt sophomore. This guy had great tape. He shut down every receiver he played this year. He's really rare because he's 6'3", about 190 pounds, but he has great change of direction and hip fluidity. And when you combine that with his press coverage skills, he's still a little raw at the line of scrimmage, but we can consider his length and his ball skills, he's a prototypical Chris Richard corner. Now, because there's so many 6'2", 6'3" corners in this class, I just wonder if Chris Richard's going to really poke the bear and say, hey, can we get a corner at 58? Because there's so many good 6'1", 6'2" corners in this class. And then transitioning back to safety, you know, I was just talking about Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State. You know, big dude. And I think Chris Richard loves his size, and there's size in this draft. There's guys like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who's only about 5'10", 5'11". Darnell Savage, only about 5'10", 5'11". And Nasir Adderley, again, 5'10", 5'11". These guys are great players, but they're not going to fit in Chris Richard's scheme. Mm-hmm. Chris Richard's not going to play him. I don't think Chris Richard's going to really, you know, wave the flag for these 5'10" guys like you mentioned.
Right.
Going back to his history in Seattle, he's always played these big 6'1", 6'2" guys, regardless of where they were in the secondary. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. I think there's less – big safeties, and there's more big corners. So if the Cowboys are going to really emphasize the length and the size, I think they're going to go corner here. And I think you have to really consider it, because there are a lot of 6'1", 6'2 corners with ability on tape.
I like where your mind is at. That's actually music to my ears. I do think that they do need to find a better boundary corner than what we saw out of Owuzie last year. I don't know if somebody that has that much trouble, not just locating the ball, but he had trouble sensing, like, reading the receiver keys that the ball was coming. You know, that was the most troubling thing for me. Like, receivers are turning to look the ball, and the Julio Jones play in the Atlanta game was probably the paramount for me. Like, Julio Jones turned to look for the ball at the 11, and Chidobe Awuzie never turned around until Jones caught the ball at the 4-yard line. Like, it was 7 yards that he didn't react to the receiver looking back and starting to extend for the ball. That's my biggest concern there.
Yeah, and let me decipher something real quick for our audience here. Catch this fade. I'm telling you, Chidobe Awuzie, he has good ball skills, but there's two differentiations between back to ball skills and catch point skills.
Yes.
Back to ball skills is when you flip your hips in man coverage and you turn the receiver, and your eyes are not on the ball. Your eyes are on the receiver and your back is to the ball. So whenever you turn to look for the ball, so you have to turn over the shoulder and locate the ball in the air. He does not do that well at all. We saw that this season consistently all week, even through the playoffs. So back to ball skills, very below average, in my opinion. Inadequate. But when he's at the point, skills are a problem. But for many corners, and it's a hard thing to teach. You either have it or you don't, because it's one of those habits you develop really early on in your football career, is if you have those instincts to turn and look for the ball over your shoulder and locate it, because that's really, you know, an awkward thing to do as a corner or anybody. So we contort your body and look for the ball behind you. And a lot of these corners in this class have a trouble with that. So it's going to be interesting to see what Chris Richard does here. But again, you nailed it on the head. I just want to decipher for audience that there's a difference between having good catch point skills and having good back to ball skills. And Chidobe Awuzie is the perfect example of that.
Like I said at the beginning in the intro to the show, there are so many people out there that are attempting to get their name out there as far as being draft experts. And I will stand by my group of guys 100% of the time because that's kind of what I do. I find people that are very talented, and I bring them to you, our listeners. So Jonah is sitting here. He has a big board already constructed before the combine, before all of that stuff, of 100, 150 names. But he also hears what other people are saying, which means that Jonah has some people that are on his list lower down that other people are hyping up as top of the draft type of prospects. And I'm sure Jonah kind of has a look on his face like, what? So I need you to go ahead and nominate. We're not going to say the player needs to catch this fade, but the draft community that has agreed that one of these guys is much higher than how Jonah sees him. Let's hear who that player is.
And you know what, Katie? I have two players who are going to catch this fade this week. And
okay.
These two names are equally it's mind-blowing. It's equally mind-blowing to see these guys in first-round mock drafts to me. The first guy is Daniel Jones from Duke.
Okay.
And the draft community, and not just draft Twitter, but also the NFL media, you see like all these NFL Network mock drafts come out with Daniel Jones in the top 15. This guy has the arm of Cody Kessler, but he has the size of Davis Webb. So people are going to say, oh, he has a big arm, strong arm dude. This guy has a noodle arm who can barely throw it across the field. So he can catch – the draft community can catch the fade with Daniel Jones, because this guy's all smoke and mirrors. He's probably going to go in the first round, but I'm telling you right now, he is this year's Tom Savage, man.
Oh, wow.
He gets a ton of hype. He's a big dude with no arm. the draft committee catches the state on Daniel Jones. That's all I have to say about him. The next guy is Voshon Joseph from Florida. Now, I have no problem with Voshon because this is a guy who Florida raves about, great leader, good guy in the locker room. But at the same time, man, this guy's being mocked in the as high the first round. I've seen him in a top 50 on some big boards, top 30. I would not – Katie, I'm not lying to you right now. I would not take this guy before the sixth round.
Wow.
I watched this tape, Katie, and it was abysmal. There was a guy last year named Jerome Baker come out of Ohio State last year. He had a good rookie season. He put in a good circumstance in Miami. But you looked at his Ohio State tape, he just – really was so good athlete, but so raw linebacker position. He really didn't know what he was doing. Voshon Joseph is that times 10. So look at him. He's a great side on the sideline guy, but in coverage, he's a guy who has – it's like he's a chicken with his head cut off. Remember, he's filling the gaps in coverage. He's a liability waiting to happen. He's a penalty waiting to happen. And he's just a guy I'm not willing to invest in before day three at the very earliest. So two players that catch a spade – in the draft community, especially for ranking these players so absurdly high. Shame on you, draft community, for ranking Daniel Jones and Voshon Joseph high, because you're just getting their hopes up whenever they're not going to be starting on the field next year.
Bruh, is Daniel Jones going to be in the green room for the whole day two thing? You know how we've seen that happen a couple times before.
Oh, yeah.
Where a player just stuck in the green room. Do you think that's a possibility for Jones?
Here's Daniel Jones. Here's the thing about Daniel. I think teams are going to figure him out. And he could end up being, like I said, Tom Savage's draft class. Remember, if Tom Savage from Pitt, he was mocked into the first round all up until April. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait, he's available in the fourth round? Like, what's going on here? It's because they realize his tape is really not that good. Daniel Jones is a great kid, from everything I've heard, a great leader, a leader by example. But at the same time, I would rather have 53 guys who can play football who aren't great leaders than 53 leaders who can't play football, if you know what I mean.
That's the bottom line. You have been rocking with the one and only Jonah Tulls. Make sure you are following him on Twitter at Jonah Tulls NFL. You know where to find me at KD Drummond NFL. And that's going to wrap up our first draft episode. Obviously, if you're listening to this on the website on Cowboys Wire, go to iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the Catch This Fade podcast. We are now coming to you once again 5 days out of the week. We are going to have a different flavor for you every day of the week to make sure that we get you through this offseason and all the way to September to the 2019 regular season. Jonah, thank you so much for all of the insight. I cannot wait to chop it up with you moving forward, talking about this draft all the way through April, my man.
Man, it's going to be a great year. I can't wait, man. Again, thanks for having me on, KD. And really, I can't wait to have more prospects catch this fade, because that was a fun segment there. And, you know, I get to unleash some of this anger I've had in my system.
You know what it is. Salute.